Schwarzenegger, they recruited me pretty hard, and I ultimately came back to the Department of Finance, but this time as the Chief Deputy Director. And I had the great honor and pleasure of working with Ana Mata Santos. She was Chief Deputy for Budget, and I was Chief Deputy for Policy, so we actually worked together for a couple of years in the second term of the Schwarzenegger administration. As the Schwarzenegger administration was winding down, Greenberg Traurig, which is a large law firm but also does government affairs work, they recruited me. I'm not a lawyer, but they recruited me into their Sacramento office to help them grow their government affairs practice. I did that for about 8 years. Finally decided I'd had enough of big law as a non-lawyer, so I started my own practice about a year and a half ago. And I left Greenberg Traurig under good terms. So now I've got my own practice. I have clients in healthcare. I've got clients in labor issues, financial services, and so on. I'm a hired hand.
For folks listening, Sheehy Public Affairs?
Sheehy Strategy Group.
Sheehy Strategy Group. Very cool. Hey, let me go back to something that you said, and I think that this is interesting for folks listening who are maybe don't live in this world. The caucus operation.
Yeah.
This is a big part of what happens and what revolves around CalEdge and this little area here that I think a lot of people don't realize or just don't know about. Can we maybe take a few minutes to just have you discuss like what goes into a caucus operation, what their role is, and why, basically how that works?
Sure. Having a strong caucus operation is really, really critical. It's critical to the majority, and it's important to the minority as well. The minority party's losing a lot of their caucus operation because they keep losing so many seats, and so they're losing the resources.
Budget, right.
But a good caucus operation is going to do three things. It's going to have a really strong communications arm, which is right in your bailiwick, Gibran. And they'll do that on behalf of the whole caucus, and they'll also do that on behalf of individual members so that they look good in their districts and it can also help in their re-elections. They're also going to have a strong...
Now, that's what you said right there.
Obviously, the state workers can't work directly on a campaign.
Everybody knows, right? Everybody knows that come campaign time, the hallways of the Capitol are going to be real empty, and if you just walk your butt down to one of the purple districts, to one of the targeted districts, what do you know? All the staffers just happen to be here.
Friends from the Capitol are down there knocking on
all
doors.
All your friends in the Capitol are just
making phone calls and knocking on doors.
When I was really trying to figure out what pathway I was going to take with Sacktown Talks, I was going to do like a man on the street type of thing with like, hey, where's everyone in the Capitol? Like storming the offices, like where's, and then going down to Modesto and seeing them all lined up. I feel bad for the staffers who kind of get voluntold.
They don't have much of a choice. They got to do it.
They have to do it. When I was on my way out, and it was clear that I wasn't going to get another assignment in the building, and you know, you can just kind of you feel that, right? But still, one of my mentors at the time was like, you know, you should just go down and walk for Adam Gray in Modesto, and I was like, fuck, man. Not particularly passionate about Our Lady of Adam Gray, first of all, and then two, just didn't like walking on doors. Three, I was paired up with like one of my friends who was a female, and she didn't want to split up in Modesto. She's like, no, we're walking these districts together.
Can't blame her.
Yeah, can't blame her. And like by the second day, I was like, do you want to just like throw these out and go to the boomers? Because you know they had a boomers right there, right?
Yeah.
And so you know it was like halfway into the second day, we walked in. We were like walking, knocking on doors, and at the time I was just buying my first house, and so I'm like really interested in home and garden at the time, right?
Yeah.
And I see this like the $1 million home in Modesto is like got a real estate sign, and there's clearly no one in there. And it's got these big Bayview windows. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna let me see if I can jump in the back door here. And check out the garden in the back. And what do you know? They had a pool. And they had
you
a chase.
You didn't jump in the pool, did you?
I didn't jump in the pool, but there was a chase lounge. There was a chase lounge back there. And, you know, we just sat there and took like an hour. And I was like, are you over this? She's like, yeah, I'm over this. It's like, let's go to the boomers. So we hit the go-karts in the arcade.
Wow.
So, but anyways.
That's classic.
Yeah, we were just told. That's probably why I didn't get another assignment. It all works out. Here I am. Hey, so... But there is a thing where it's like, and you know, honestly, what the staff does on its own time, I think and I'm not even really particularly offended by this, but there is a question of like whether you're using state resources towards the re-election of individual members, right?
Yeah.
One of my jujitsu coaches.
You can't use state resources for the election of anything.
No, but but we're kind of doing it. Let me just kind of work through this and tell me, okay.
one of my jujitsu coaches, Aaron Martinez, this one's for you. He was a, we're talking about the nature of fake news. And he was like, well, you know, anytime you're not, you know, anytime you're not like totally factual and you're really more like propagating information towards the, towards an agenda, that's propaganda. You're propagating information towards an agenda. Yeah. That's propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, it occurred to me, like, man, a lot of these like communications arms, so-called communications arms of like the COC, the DCO or whatever, you're just propagating you're just propagating information and themes and stuff for the betterment of your members and hoping that some of that trickles over to the non, to the non-state side, some of that goodwill. But it seems like a terrible waste of state resources because the offices, in my view, just aren't that particularly effective, honestly. And like you need like 10 like caucus dollars to really have the effectiveness of like one campaign dollar because you can't target in the same ways and the staff isn't geared the same way. But anyways, that's part of what they do as a communications arm is they put together these not totally relevant messaging, but just kind of like bland and banal messaging. Like, hey, it's mosquito and vector awareness month. It's safe digging month. Kind of this like good civil service type of engagement stuff. But I always find that stuff falls a little bit flat and fails to really speak to the issues that are most relevant to people in the communities. One of the things that I think was most formative in my political journey was I spent a year as a field rep. And, you know, who goes first in those town hall meetings is the cops. And then the second is like sometimes they would have like an education representative.
No, the folks in the uniforms go first.
Yeah, the folks in the uniforms go first, but they also like people actually shut up and listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And then two, they sometimes they would have like an update from like, you know, because a lot of these were like done, a lot of these town hall meetings are like at the actual schools.
Yeah.
And so there'd be like someone from the schools being like, hey, we're doing the fun drive, or like, hey, we're low on, you know, tickets for this or cash for that or whatever. But there was like, man, there was like a real ear to the ground for those things. And then by the time like the elected representatives, you know, came around, it was just kind of like, whatever. You know, people care most about those like issues that directly speak to their privation.
Right. You know? Right.
And so, but anyways, so for folks listening, the caucus operations do kind of those large communications.
Yeah, but
I think you said you had those three things.
So yeah, there's three elements. There's the communications element we just talked about, and then there's policy and there's fiscal. And so all of the bill analyses on the majority and minority side are really done. Well, it's a little bit different on the majority side because they have committee staff, but they also have caucus staff that do analyses as well. Particularly for the minority party, the only analyses that their members pay attention to is what's done by their caucus staff. But the policy work is very important for obvious reasons, and then the fiscal work. Everything that gets done in appropriations and budget, you've got to have a really strong caucus operation to make sure the members are getting good analyses on policy and fiscal. So for some members, they're more oriented towards communications, you know, and politics. Other members are very policy oriented. Some members are real fiscal policy wonks. It sort of depends on the member, but the caucus operation needs to be strong in all three areas.
Very cool. Very cool. And you did that. And then you went to Greenberg Traurig.
That's right. Then I went to TIA Cref, which is a financial services company. Gotcha. I worked there for a couple of years, and then the Schwarzenegger administration recruited me. I worked in the second term for Schwarzenegger, and then I got recruited right when Schwarzenegger was terming out of office. I got recruited by Greenberg Traurig to come in, and I worked there for about 8 years before I started my own practice, the Sheehy Strategy Group.
Very cool. So, okay, so just for folks listening, we didn't just pull some guy off the streets. Okay, budget head at Caltrans, helped set up the caucus operation in the Senate. Worked in the Schwarzenegger administration, TIA Kraft, and then went to a big law firm.
Yep.
And then he went to a big law firm as a non-lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay. Baller alert. And then now you are here on your own with
a number
of clients.
That's
you worked last year. We're here to the topic today really is AB5.
Yeah.
And let me preface this by saying that these AB5 stories are not AstroTurf.
Right.
These AB5, you know, we both know what AstroTurf looks like.
Right.
Okay. These AB5 story, every... You know what's interesting? Like, okay, so I live in this political sector a little bit. I teach martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have my family. And then my wife, I'm just amazed. Like, I love my wife to, hey, I love her to death. We're just we live in two very different cultural enclaves. Okay, I grew up Mexican Democrat. She is like old Elk Grove Republican.
Oh, okay.
You know, family out in Galt. And she's a country music gal, you know? But what I'm saying is, like, just by virtue of this, I feel like I've kind of dipped into all these different cultural enclaves.
Yeah.
You know, my Mexican immigrant family,
yeah.
My martial arts people, my wife has this whole group of friends in Elk Grove and in Galton and Harold in the country. Every one of those cultural enclaves that I exist in, every one of those has had someone complain to me about AB5.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
My mother my mother was a bad girl. She met her future husband in the newsroom.
Okay.
She worked
What's
for the-
What's bad about that?
Well, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to fraternize.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Charlie Newman.
It's hard enough to meet people, let alone if you can't-
Yeah. How do you meet people once you're grown up, right? So they met in the newsroom.
Yeah.
She's a journalist. Charlie was a photographer. They've been together for 20 years now. But Charlie was a photographer for the San Diego Union Tribune for 17 years. They laid him off. And, you know, he was really in a tough place. He had this like, he just really was really in a tough place after, because there was like a loss of identity and all these things happened. But, you know, that's really just the way that work is going nowadays. Like these like permanent, stable, long-term jobs.
Yeah.
But what do you know? He bought himself a drone. He bought back a lot of his camera equipment. He's working as an independent contractor now, and he's like making more money than he was before.
Is he being impacted?
Oh, completely and totally. His biggest client is the paper that laid him off. But, you know, I mean, it actually works out better for him because he was like, you know, I'm not even sure that I could have kept up with the old schedule. So he's like, I can only get a certain amount of jobs from this paper now. And what's going to wind up happening is they're just going to write off all the independent contractors as a group. I said, well, you know, you can set up an LLC. You can do this. You can do that. You can do your own business. He's like, I don't want to do that. I was fine. He was like, leave me alone. I was fine.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this for a second, Gibran.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Another one. My wife, she's friends with all the restheticians.
Okay.
She's friends with all the restheticians, right? And so her, you know, Lauren, this one's for you. They're like, what the heck is going on? These people, your buddies at the state are going to do what to me?
Yeah.
I got to set up an LLC. It's $800 a year to set up an LLC to be my own. So now the estheticians are pissed off and afraid, right? And I'm a martial artist.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you something about martial arts. Okay. Lorena, by the way, you're invited to come on the show. She has a standing invitation. We'll see if she comes. She's come on before. We want to talk to you about this because I know where you're coming from, and I deeply, deeply respect you. You're one of my favorite legislators.
She was addressing a real problem.
She was addressing a real problem. Yeah. Okay. So let's be clear. We're addressing problems too, though, here, you and I. Martial arts. Okay. I have this ESAC BJJ, Come Find a Stronger You. I have this martial arts dojo where I teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, right?
Yep.
Monday through Thursday, 6:30 p.m., I'm on the mat. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6 a.m., I'm on the mat.
Okay.
Okay. And then Saturdays at 11.
All right.
Okay? So before you and I got here, I was with my students.
Okay.
So I have to be on that mat to service my students, right? And to service my business.
Right.
It works out for me, but tonight, I'm not going to be on the mat because I'm going to be at the bash.
Right.
Thank you, David Quintana.
Right.
So what happens?
Do you got an extra ticket?
I do, actually. But so what happens is I got to pull one of my buddy asides from the martial arts world and be like, hey, you know what? I can't make it tonight. Might you want to come in and what do you teach? $50 an hour. We'll say 2 hours of your time for setup. You know, it's in a 1 hour class.
Right.
2 hours of your time. We'll pay you $100 to teach this class.
Right.
And it honestly, that's how people get their start.
Right.
You know?
Well, so under that scenario, you fail the B prong of the test, and that's the big problem, is the B prong.
Can you, sorry, I just started riffing because I'm pissed off.
Okay.
But can you take, maybe you can take us one step back.
Let's go back.
Maybe you can start with Borrello. Is that a good place to start, or do you want to start with like the policy that's being addressed?
Let's back up a step just on AB5 and the origins of that. I think, you know, you and I both acknowledged that Lorena was addressing a real problem. There's no question, but that some companies in California's economy have misused 1099 worker classification. And the Dynamex company was one of those, which is why they got sued. And it resulted in the case that we now refer to as, well, it's technically Dynamex, but everybody says Dynamex.
Can we just say Dynamex?
Thanks. It's the B prong of the ABC test that's causing everybody heartburn, because the B prong basically says that the services you're providing have to be outside of the scope of the business that you're providing it for. So in your case, you're running a martial arts studio. You're going to miss a class. You need to bring in a contractor to cover you. Well, he's providing the same service that you provide in that business, so you fail on the B prong. Let's take a couple of diverse examples to show what a big problem this actually is in California. And again, acknowledging the fact that AB5 has addressed some real abuses, but let's talk about the flooring industry.
Yeah.
California does about $1 billion a year in floor products. Somebody's got to install that, whether it's carpet, hardwood floor, linoleum, whatever it is.
the men and women that do those installations work for a long list of companies. They might have 10, 12, 15 different retailers that they work for. They're contractors. Well, they're not going to pass the B prompt because what are they doing? They're installing flooring for a company that sells floors. Yeah. Okay. So
not going to work for them.
So that's going to be a huge problem right there. They say, well, what's the problem? They can just become employees. Well, if you're working for 15 different retail, you're going to be an employee for 15 different companies.
Right.
Think about how inefficient all that paperwork is.
Also, you bought the truck, you bought your tools, you set yourself up in a certain way.
Exactly.
I mean, like right now, you know, there was, let me just, I always find a way to make it about me, but you know, I opened the martial arts studio because I had this other skill that I could monetize.
Yeah.
And politics, I was failing to find assignments. I had job insecurity. I wasn't finding the success that I thought I deserved. And I was just ready for something different. So I opened up the martial arts studio. That was the first thing that I did for myself that was entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, holy hell, I can do entrepreneurial things and actually cover my expenses here. So then I started doing this.
Right.
Right. And what do you know? I have multimedia consulting projects, storytellerca.com. Okay. For all your multimedia events, photography, video and audio needs. Like right now I'm at a point where it's like, even just 2 or 3 years ago, it's like, man, let me get another job in the building. That's all I know how to do. Now I couldn't take one.
Right.
I'm making more money than I was before.
Right.
And you know what? Aside from being in the studio, I'm in my underwear at home working on my couch.
Right.
It's good for me.
Right.
You know, if my stepkids need to be picked up, I go pick up my stepkids. The freedom, right? The freedom of being an independent contractor. That's not just a talking point. That's not
astroturf. No, it's real.
That's real.
Well, let's take a couple other examples on how things that people wouldn't think about. So let's say you are, you're a household, you've got kids and you've got a young daughter that's interested in dance. So you're hooking up with a local dance studio. Okay. Well, dance studios bring in specialized instructors to teach specific things. Under AB5, those specialized instructors are going to have to become employees, even though they may only spend a couple of hours a month at the actual dance studio. So now all of a sudden, the studio owner is forced to make a long list of employees of folks that otherwise would just be showing up for specialized services. So it's a problem for the dance studio. What does it mean? It means the cost of getting your daughter ballet lessons is going to go way up. It may put some dance studios out of business altogether.
And then what's the logical conclusion of that?
Take a disadvantaged community like the deaf. How do the deaf get by, particularly like in universities? Let's talk about universities. Let's say you're deaf and you're at UC Davis. Well, when they're in a lecture hall, there has to be a sign language interpreter there so that they can understand what's going on. Those sign language interpreters work at multiple institutions. They work at educational institutions. They work for the courts. They work for a lot of different institutions. Under AB5, they're going to have to be employees, and you get the same problem, which is, well, if I'm working for 10 different universities as a sign language interpreter, does that mean I've got to be an employee of all 10 universities? It just doesn't make sense. So while AB5 is addressing a real problem in our economy about going after bad actors that were abusing the 1099 process, the problem is it wasn't a surgical approach. It was a meat cleaver approach. So you have all of these businesses that have legitimately used independent contractors that now are being caught up in AB5. And so I'm working with businesses right now trying to figure out how we can make some adjustments in that law so that they can continue to stay in business.
Hey,
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Let me back up here. We kind of started with the rage because I'm pissed off. My step, Charlie Newman. Charlie did nothing to deserve this, man. He just got right again. You know, Charlie's my stepfather.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Charlie Newman.
Okay.
The photographer guy.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. See, that explains why you're so talented with audio visual.
Yeah. He's a great guy. You know what? Charlie's a great dude, man, but he just got right after he got laid off. He just righted the ship. Well, he didn't just right it, but I mean, it was a long arc for him. You know, he was in his 50s, loss of identity, you know, it was tough for him, you know, but he just righted the ship. And now you hit him with AB5.
Yeah.
And he's going to lose a bunch of clients. And he's like, gosh, I don't know what's going to happen. He's like, I'm getting for retirement. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, that's part of the reason that I'm kind of passionate about this. And one of the other reasons is like, I also feel directly affected as a martial arts instructor. Let me tell you, just in my little world, okay? What happens is like, tonight I can't make it. I'm going to grab one of my buddies and be like, hey, I'll give you $100 to cover the class. And he says, sure. And it's kind of, you know, I might 1099 him at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just I grab a different buddy every time and it's kind of an informal thing, which is really probably what's going to happen, right? But, you know, if I was big enough, I would have somebody if my operation was big enough, I would have somebody on standby where it's like, okay, you're going to come, you know, maybe 100 times a year or something like that. And you're still an independent contractor because you might go to another martial arts gym. Right. And, but listen, that's how people get their start, is they do guest teaching spots.
Yeah.
And what do you know? People say, hey, I identify with Gibran. I identify with this guy. I really like his style of teaching. When he gets his own when he gets his own dojo, I'm going to go with him. And that's totally okay. But that's how people get their start.
That's how they get their start. Well, let's talk.
And you're going to take that away. You know, so let me just back up here, because I want to be fair and transparent. Folks, if this talk seems one-sided, it's because he is a lobbyist working on AB5 issues, okay? So let me be totally clear about that, right? But that's okay. I mean,
well, I have people contacting me that are being impacted by it, so.
So
I'm hearing a lot of stories.
Just because this is his job, just because he's a lobbyist, doesn't mean what we're saying isn't true, right? And I think that's a lot of what's happening with communications, right?
I have to make sure everything I'm saying is fact-based.
Exactly, right, yeah. So, but I'm just saying that this is, we're coming from a particular point of view because you have clients, and that's okay. Yeah. I think that's okay. People put everything through their own filter, right? But I just want to be clear about where we're coming from.
Sure,
for the benefit of our listeners.
Sure.
Can we maybe back up a little bit?
Sure.
And just give kind of a devil's advocate, or maybe talk about the Borrello test, if you're prepared to talk, if you want to talk about that. And,
a little bit,
and just
sure.
kind of like what the, you know, we don't have to go through the whole 11 test, but basically how we went from one standard to another and what the problem that we're trying to address, just for the civic engagement and the education of our listeners and people.
Of course.
So a little bit of background.
Before the Dynamex decision and before AB5 was passed and signed into law by Governor Newsom, the law that governed this issue of whether you were a 1099 contractor or a W-2 employee was determined by Borrello. So if the EDD came into your business to do an audit, okay, and they were trying to determine whether you were lawfully using contractors or not, the standard they would use was this Borrello test. Now, the Borrello test had a number of moving parts to it. It wasn't just an A, B, C test. I think there were 10 or 11 prongs. I'm not a labor lawyer, but I've gotten to know quite a bit.
I think it was like 11, yeah.
Gotten to know quite a bit about this. You didn't have to pass every single one of the 11, but you had to pass a majority of them. You had to be able to make the case. The Borrello test wasn't necessarily easy, but it was passable. So for those entities that have now been carved out of AB5, it doesn't mean they can do whatever they want. It simply means they revert back to this Borrello test. So Borrello still matters in California's economy.
Wait, so let me, with Borrello, what was happening with Borrello, just to be fair, was that there were bad actors who were saying, hey, we can kind of game this test.
Yes.
That was what was happening, right? It's like you had this complex test with all these different prongs, and the bad actors are saying, hey, we can kind of game this, and we have this whole class of people like janitorial workers who are never going to get the benefit of employment, are never going to get medical benefits, are never going to get any type of security.
Right.
And we're going to kind of keep them in this, you know, they show up every day for 40 hours a week, but there's kind of going to be kept in this like permanent underclass because we're able to game this test. So
look, it was a way to take advantage of people and keep your costs down. And it was just blatantly unfair. And I think that was the genesis of what Loren is trying to fix.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's
a good thing.
Yeah. And so there was a court ruling called Dynamex.
Correct.
Which came this three.
It was made in the summer of 2018.
Okay.
The Dynamex decision came down from the California Supreme Court. So they're the entity that in their decision created the ABC test.
Okay.
What Lorena did is she came in the following January, a year ago, and she introduced AB5 to not only codify what the Dynamex decision was, but to expand it to the entire labor code. Because the Dynamex decision was much more narrow, just dealing with wage orders, things like minimum wage, hours worked, things like that. Lorena brought in unemployment insurance, workers' comp.
Everything
that's in the labor code. So it's a much broader thing that she did, and this is what's causing so many problems for those entities that weren't really the target. Look, it's clear to me, and I think it's clear to most people, that Uber, Lyft, and some of the big internet platform-based services were the target here. And there's no question that, at least in most people's mind, there were some abuses going on there. But in going after those type of internet platform companies, which were the sort of the poster child of AB5, a lot of small entities got caught up in it. Like I mentioned dance studios, I mentioned flooring installers, the hard of hearing community, martial arts studios, anybody that's providing a service to the public. Let me give you one that folks wouldn't think about on the natural. This could be the end of the live music scene in California.
And these are your people.
Yeah. Why could it be the end of the live music scene? Who's one of your favorite artists that might play a gig in?
Peter Petty.
Okay, so let's say that he's got a gig and he wants to bring in an extra horn player. What he's going to do right now is he's going to execute a contract, and that guy's going to get paid $150 that night or $200 or whatever it is. He comes in, he does a gig, and he's gone. Under AB5, he's got to make that guy an employee.
So if I'm a band leader and I'm wanting to do a, and I want to go down to the Crest Theater and do a gig, and I want to bring in a horn section because I don't have a horn section in my band, but I've got horn charts, I've got to make them employees, W-2 employees.
You don't have the resources.
And I can't do that. I'm not.
You're just a guy.
I'm just playing gigs.
Yeah.
So people don't realize the ongoing ripples that this is going to have through our economy. Now, I'll tell you, professional musicians are really, really concerned right now about AB5. If you go onto Twitter and look at some of the comments that are going on, they're very, very concerned about the live music scene. So these folks were not the target of AB5. And that's why there's already bills that have been introduced. There's going to be a lot more bills introduced before the bill introduction deadline to try to address some of these issues.
Yeah. So now we get to play the Democrats' favorite game. It's whacking exemption, right? Like now we get to play the exemption game. Who gets paid out? The lobbyists get paid out. The consultants get paid out. The Democrats get paid out through their campaigns. Let's be totally honest here.
Okay. Yeah.
But who's living in uncertainty? Who's living in uncertainty and who's wondering if you're going to take their livelihoods away? Dance studios, professional martial arts instructors, the gig players.
Flooring installers.
Yeah, I mean, this is just part of the entire... I saw this chart the other day and it talked about like the concentration of wealth in America. And one of the things that has happened is that like the wealthiest neighborhoods in America now are the suburbs within a 50 square mile radius of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And all the rest of the country has been hollowed out.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the mechanisms by which the professional and permanent political class continues to enrich itself. And just Joe Schmo on the street who wants to make a buck. Sorry. I guess, you're out of luck. If you can hire a lobby, if you can hire Tom Sheehy, Sheehy Strategies, maybe we can help get you an exemption. But I'm not saying that's fine. This is what's going to happen, now we're going to play the exemption game for a decade.
Well, there's no question. It's complicated. And if you want to change a law in Sacramento, you really do need professional
help. You better
come
in with $100,000.
If you're a small dance studio, what you need to do is band together with other dance studios. Yeah. If you're in the flooring industry, get a hold of all the other flooring retailers and form a coalition and pool your money together, and then you can hire somebody. The key thing is whatever you do is make sure you've got somebody on the ground in Sacramento that knows the process so that they can look out after your interests.
Right.
You can't assume that just making a few phone calls to a legislator's office that they're going to carry the water for you. They are subject to too many cross currents and pressures. You've got to have somebody really arguing your case in order to get it done.
Yeah. So what do they say if you're not at the table, you're on the menu?
Well, it's unfortunate, but it's true. You really have to have an advocate, or as you just said, if you don't have a seat at the table when this bill's being negotiated, you're on the menu. It's just the way it works.
Yeah. What did Winston Churchill say is like the worst form of government? What's democracy is a terrible form of government until you see all the others.
It can be a messy process. Hey,
I actually think that there's a space here to talk about just sort of political organizing 101 and just,
sure.
What do we say? Divide and conquer. What do we say? What's the antithesis of that is strength in numbers, right? Now we talked about this, an individual dance studio just doesn't have the wherewithal. They're teaching lessons. They're physically not here.
Right.
They don't know how the process works. One individual dance studio can't do that, but 1,000 dance studios working together.
That's right.
Everyone chips in $100 or whatever it is.
That's right.
Now we got $100,000.
Right.
We're going to chip in. We're going to team up with the martial arts instructors. We're going to team up with the floors. We're going to team up with the dish installer, the cable install guys.
Right.
And we're going to bring some resources to the table to represent us all.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, it's as American as apple pie, right?
Right.
So, but I guess just saying is like, I think that there's, and one of the folks that I had on here is one of my favorite guests is Ray Labov, and we're overdue to have him on.
Ray's again. A good guy.
Ray's a great guy. And
he's trained a lot of lobbyists.
He's just masterclass on lobbying, right?
Yeah.
But it's a good thing to know. It's a good interface for how your government works. But the truth is, when it's something that's directly affecting your livelihood like this, man, you're gonna have to do. I mean, brush up on the lobbying tips for when you come to the Capitol. But I hope you're bringing a little bit more than that. You don't want to bring a knife to a gunfight.
That's right. Well,
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we've talked about some of the individual entities. You talked about the martial arts studios, which you have expertise in. I've mentioned dance studios. What we're really talking about in those cases are skilled professional instructors. So we don't necessarily need to carve out dance studios from AB5, but what you may want to do...
A broader category.
You may want to go to a broader category like skilled professional instructors. And now you may loop in a number of different lines of work, martial arts studios, dance studios, music stores that bring in instructors to teach
the tuba, guys at Guitar Center,
or the saxophone, the guys at Guitar Center. I mean, they're not all employees. Um, so So maybe what we do is a coalition, and coalition building is go to a broader definition like skilled professional instructors. Now we can make it an even bigger tent, have more people participating, and it spreads out all the costs. Because ultimately, you need a lobbyist on the ground. You need to have a good communications campaign, which means you're going to be paying a PR firm. And you may need a really good labor lawyer to make sure you draft the language properly. I mean, I know a lot about the legislative process, and I've drafted bills, but I'm not a labor lawyer. So I can assure you and, you know, the clients that I work with that when it comes down to the actual drafting of these amendments, I'm going to have a talented labor lawyer doing that work.
Hey, let me give a quick shout out to one of the folks that I'm interacting with on Twitter, at TruckerGal1. Okay, at TruckerGal1. She may come on the show. She's another, you know, pretty much AB5 horror story. But basically, she has a trucking. They haul dirt, asphalt. So for road paving, grading, stuff like that, they haul the raw materials, right? And they arrange the hauling of the raw materials. But they have a network of contractors.
Right.
They have a network of contractors, and sometimes the contractors want to work. You know, it's just that's just how their business is set up. And what else does she say? She says, "You know what? I just invested like 170 grand to get right with the ARB
on the engine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just put 170 grand into my truck and now I can't use it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. It's the same thing as like what Charlie Newman, my father-in-law, you know, Charlie, I love you, man, but he just got right. He literally just got right. And now you're going to take it away from him, you know? So, you know, I mean, it's just again and again and again, you know, now for them, they mentioned they legally, there seems to have been like an injunction or there was a,
For the truckers? Yeah. The truckers have gotten judicial relief. Okay. I don't know that, I don't know all the facts involved, but I think that they're no longer, they don't have any exposure at the moment. I'm not sure that the judicial process, what the next step in that's going to be, but right now the truckers are not, they don't have exposure. And what I mean by that is, let's say in the martial arts studio and you're bringing in a guest instructor, you've got exposure. I mean, starting January 1st of this year, you've got exposure under AB5.
Like legal liability.
Well, yeah, and financial. I mean, if EDD comes in and does an audit and determines that you were paying people as a contractor that should have been employees, you are subject to civil penalties. You've got to pay the back taxes, the back payroll taxes.
Oh, my God.
There can be additional fines and interest. So you've got exposure.
Okay. Hey,
so the truckers...
For folks teaching my classes, you're no longer getting paid.
So the truckers, by getting the injunction put in place, they don't have any exposure right now. Now there's going to be some more twists and turns in that matter, in that legal matter. But right now they don't have any exposure because they've gotten this initial ruling from the court. So, look, it's a serious matter for any business out there that has been subject to an EDD audit. When the government comes in and wants to see your books, it's a very uncomfortable situation.
I'll bet, yeah.
And if you're using 1099 contractors, you've got to make damn sure that you're following the law or you're going to be subject to some serious fines and penalties.
Hey, we talked about sort of carving out exempt, you know, playing the exemption game. And and really this is couched in the sense of Lorena was going after one sort of public policy outcome and one, these sets of bad actors.
Yeah.
Oh man, we haven't even gotten into the journalists. You know, Scott Lay. Scott talks about how he's affected by this too.
Yeah. Kind of arbitrary what they did to the journalists. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
What 36? You can do 30.
Can you talk about?
I don't know all the facts because I didn't have a journalist client. But I mean, as I understand it, they picked a certain number of submissions you can make before you had to become an employee. I don't know.
I think the journalists wanted 70, and like they wanted zero.
So they split the baby.
They split the baby. 35.
It's
whatever.
It's not a good way to make policy.
Oh my God. Is Lorena receptive to, like, you're working with the author, I'm guessing?
Well,
what's the tone of the negotiation?
I had this referral. So the client, I got a carve out for a client last year. They ran a tutor referral service. So I worked with Lorena's office and with the consultants in the legislature to create the referral agency exemption. Right.
And what does that look like? That says like, hey, these aren't the people you're after.
Well, I think everybody everybody that works in the referral agency business was pleased that they put that amendment into the bill at the very end. But I think the problem is that some of the provisional requirements under that are vague. And if the requirements are vague, it doesn't give certainty to the business owner that they're operating lawfully. So some of the cleanup work on AB5 will be going back in where they did make carve-outs and make exemptions and making sure that they're going to work. Okay.
Okay.
Because if you leave something subject to interpretation, then different people are going to come to different conclusions. So that's part of the concern with some of the exemptions that actually were put into the bill. They may not do exactly what the legislature think they do.
Got it. Got it. Is there, man, I could riff on this for a while. You know, is there anything else that we've failed to cover that we should kind of, that we should go through? But just,
no, I would just say that if you look at the committee analysis of AB 5, and even if, listen, I'll tell you what's interesting. Go back and listen to the closing statement that Lorena Gonzalez made at the end of the Senate Labor Committee hearing, which was right before the 4th of July. It was like July 2nd or something last year. Even Lorena, in her closing argument, acknowledged there was going to have to be cleanup legislation. Now, I want to say, I think her office has done a nice job of working with people. I had a good experience working with her office and her staff last year. They listened very carefully.
Dude, her staff is A1.
I mean, they asked me a lot of tough questions, and I didn't know that I was going to get a carve out in the bill until the very last minute. But working with her staff was fine. And I think, you know, Lorena has a point of view, but she'll listen to you. She's very smart, and I think he can make an argument. So I see this as an office and somebody we can continue to work with. And I think, you know, we just need to acknowledge the fact that a lot of people are being helped as a result of AB 5, but what we have to do is address the people that are getting hurt by it.
Very cool. Where can folks connect with you?
Just Tom Sheehy, Sheehy, just Google Sheehy Strategy Group and I'll pop up on the internet.
Right.
In fact, I've got some articles and videos on my website that talk about AB5 you can check out and some other stuff and you can learn about my practice. I appreciate you asking that, Jabron. Cool.
Tom Sheehy of Sheehy Strategy Group, thanks for coming on, brother.
Thank you very much, Jabron. It's great to see you this morning.
Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.